who was lifting a stack of pancakes out of a frying pan. Evelyn quickly slid the pancakes onto a platter, set it down, and came to give Ginger a hug. "How are you?" Another hug went to Callie. "How are you?"
"We're good,"
Ginger said, and Callie agreed.
"Goody good."
"I'm so relieved."
Evelyn wiped at the corner of her eyes.
"Oof, I can barely speak."
She waved the air and quickly shook her head, as if shaking off a troublesome thought.
"How many pancakes? 2, 3, 4?
She offered the platter and Ginger took 2. When Callie couldn't decide, Ginger gave her 2 as well.
"If you want chocolate chips on top, you can have them," Mimi said.
"Or you could pour Bosco on top. That's what I did. You can have anything you want on top, right?"
Evelyn nodded and wiped her eyes again.
"Where's Charlie?"
Ginger asked.
"Where's Mom?"
"At the hospital,"
Evelyn said.
"She'll be back soon. Juice?"
She started filling glasses without waiting for an answer. Mimi quickly told Ginger what she'd learned so far.
"Dad came on the same boat as Evelyn, but he went straight to the hospital. I don't know where Mr. Diggins went."
She turned to Evelyn.
"Is Charlie coming home today, or are we going to the hospital to see him? I've never been in a hospital room. I hope we go there."
Evelyn put down the pitcher.
"I'll be right back."
When Ginger found her, she was at the front door, holding it ajar, as if she'd needed air. A soft noise escaped from her mouth when she noticed Ginger watching.
"I'm so sorry,"
Evelyn said as she opened her arms again.
"Sorry, why?"
Ginger let herself be held. She whispered the next.
"What happened?" "Oh, honey,"
Evelyn whispered back.
"I shouldn't be the one. Please, I want to know."
Evelyn stroked Ginger's hair and then took her hand and led her to the living room, where the scent of Mr. Diggins' cherry tobacco still hung in the air like a cloud. As soon as she sat down, perched at the very edge of the sofa, Ginger knew nothing good was coming. Evelyn was always crisply put together, with pressed clothes and hair tied back in a no-muss, no-fuss style. But today, her Oxford shirt was buttoned wrong, and her hair had a crooked part that made it look askew. She was struggling with what to say, and worst of all, she didn't bother to dab away the tears that were now running in 2 wet lines down her face. When she finally did speak, her voice was so quiet, Ginger couldn't understand her.
"He didn't make it,"
she said. She repeated herself.
"He didn't make it."
And then,
"He's gone."
Which was what Glory had said when Ivan the Director died. Ginger waited to feel something, but her eyes stayed dry. Evelyn stroked her cheek.
"It's okay to cry. I've been crying all morning."
How could Ginger explain to someone who'd cried all morning that she had no feelings at all? She pinched her arm and still felt nothing. She stamped her foot on the floor, but her foot was numb. A moment later, the numb sensation passed.
"I have to throw up."
And then they heard it, a car rumbling up the driveway. Ginger swallowed the taste of vomit and wiped the corner of her eyes where her tears had started to amass. By the time Solly opened the screen door, they were waiting for him. Ginger thought her father looked unusually pale and slight. Not at all how she thought of him. He hesitated for a moment when he saw her, and then, as if making up for lost time, quickly moved to give her a tight hug, arms stiff as fence posts at her back. Glory remained outside on the top step, as if stuck. The sun was in her mother's eyes, and Ginger could make out dark circles where her makeup had run. Her lips looked white and caked, and her shoulders sat at an odd angle, as if her body had sunk down on one side. She seemed unable to do the simplest thing, walk into the house. Evelyn saw this and fetched her. holding her by the elbow to guide her in, as if she were blind. For a moment, Ginger wondered if she had gone blind. At least that would explain why her mother walked past her without even noticing she was there. Solly took in Ginger's puzzled expression and moved next to her, laying a wooden hand on her shoulder. Together, they watched Evelyn lead Glory down the hall to the back bedroom. And then Mimi and Callie were running out of the kitchen, Mimi hugging her father hard and babbling about how they'd stayed in their room all afternoon, and how Mr. Diggins came and didn't want them downstairs, and how they'd all slept squished in one bed. It took a while for her to notice her father wasn't listening. She stepped away and pulled Callie with her.
"Where's Charlie?"
Mimi asked, and Ginger closed her eyes.
"Not coming back," Solly said.
That wasn't enough information for Mimi.
"Why? Where is he?"
Ginger quickly motioned up toward the sky.
"In his room?"
Mimi asked. And Callie answered,
"Heaven. Heaven 11.
"Not true," Mimi said.
"Charlie waved at Ginger on the beach. He's fine."
"Okay, that's it."
Solly hustled them to the door.
"Come on, outside."
It was rare for him to tell them what to do, so when he did, they listened. Outside, he pulled Callie close to him, as if she needed protection.
"Your mother's not well. She hears talk like that, you'll make it worse. Charlie waved. Charlie didn't wave. It doesn't matter. He's gone. She's sick."
"Sick how?"
Mimi asked. He banged his heart with his fist.
"Sick here."
He reached over and rubbed a tear from Ginger's cheek with his thumb. Ginger hadn't even known a tear was there.
"The doctor told her she can't have any talk like that right now. She can't have any talk like that ever. Understand?"
They nodded.
"Tell me what I said."
"We can't talk about it now," Ginger repeated. "We can't talk about it ever."
"Good," he said. "I knew I could count on you."
"But..."
Mimi was confused.
"What is it we're not talking about?"
Solly put his finger to his lips.
"Your mother could be listening. No questions."
They all looked around. Glory didn't seem to be there, but how could they be sure?
"What's done is done. Nothing will change anything. So?"
His hand went to his mouth, and his fingers did a little turn.
"He's locking his lips,"
Ginger whispered to Mimi, who was about to ask. Sally's voice softened.
"Tomorrow, we'll go home. But at home, you're all going to have to be really strong for your mother. Can you do that? Be patient and strong?"
"I'm strong and patient," Callie boasted. "I'm patient and strong. I'm a strong patient."
"Stop it," Ginger said. Solly pulled Callie closer.
"Yes, you are. Strong as a skyscraper. All of you. You just got to stick close together. Like rubber cement."
"Like blubber cement,"
Callie repeated, as if this was a game. Ginger gave her a shove.
"Stop."
"Gingy,"
Solly's voice was pleading.
"She's little. She doesn't know better."
"Sorry,"
she turned to her sister.
"I love blubber cement, too."
When they went back inside, Evelyn was waiting, eyes rimmed with red. Ginger watched as she stepped away with Solly and made a hushed report. He listened and shrugged again. A staccato movement that got more and more pronounced until Evelyn reached over and laid a hand on his shoulder, and the shrugs stopped. Ginger slipped away so her father wouldn't know she'd been watching. He joined her in the kitchen a few moments later.
"Evelyn wants to talk to you before she leaves. She's waiting outside."
Ginger found her standing next to an idling car.
"I wanted to let you know I won't be coming back to New Jersey for a while," Evelyn said. "But as soon as I do, I promise first thing I'll come ring your bell."
She laid her soft palm on Ginger's hot cheek.
Things may be tough for a while, but your mom is strong, stronger than she knows.
She took Ginger's hands.
She's going to be okay, I promise. But you have to promise something to me.
Ginger would have promised anything, except she couldn't risk opening her mouth. There were just too many things that might spill out. She might plead for Evelyn to stay, or she might beg for Evelyn to take her with her. She might even dare to ask if Evelyn knew what punishment Glory had in mind for her for letting the accident happen under her watch. That it hadn't been under her watch, she knew, would be no excuse. Evelyn interrupted her thoughts.
Promise me you won't worry too much.
Ginger risked a nod. Evelyn nodded back, opened the passenger door, and slid inside. Finally, Ginger found words that seemed safe.
When you get home, can I go back to being a mother's helper for you?
Tears were coming now, and Ginger had to squeeze her eyes hard to stop them. By the time she forced them open, the car had turned around. As it bolted down the driveway, she caught a glimpse of Evelyn, hands covering her face.
Chapter 22. It was only when Ginger tried to pay the gas station attendant who drove her back to her car that she discovered she'd left her wallet at home. She offered to come by and pay him first thing in the morning, and then remembered tomorrow was her mother's funeral. She started to explain her frazzled state, but the attendant interrupted her.
"Ma'am, this gallon's on me."
Back behind the wheel, it didn't take long for her thoughts to turn to Callie. But every time she tried to picture her youngest sister, she came up blank. Glory's prohibition against photographs had done its work. Their mother's reasons changed depending on her mood. Sometimes it was,
"They're just dust magnets."
Other times it was,
"I prefer to start every day fresh."
But now, with Julia gone, Ginger finally understood. Her mother had banned photographs because the captured memories were painful to see. She pulled up to the house and strengthened her resolve. Tonight was not the time for interrogation. For now, it wasn't important to know why Callie left or what kept her away. What mattered was she was back. As she walked up the flagstone path, careful not to disturb the deteriorating stones, Ginger wondered again how it was that Callie found out Glory died. Her best guess? Mimi tracked her down. She stopped at the front door and saw her face reflected in the glass, her expression a billboard for worry. It was the same expression that drove Dinah scurrying down the hall with her phlebitis leg, the same expression that drove Julia into Nick's car and then all the way to Portland. She could not risk driving Callie away, too. She smiled and stepped inside. The house grumbled its usual complaints. A pipe groaned from within the old walls. A floorboard creaked above her head. And there it was, the rocketing rhythm of Mimi's voice when she was telling a story. Her sisters were in the kitchen. Ginger stopped. What should she say? What was a person supposed to say to a sister who'd been gone for... She paused to do the math, but the math was too painful.
More than 25 years.
A cabinet door slammed. Silverware clattered into the sink. A wave of dizziness swept over her. She swept into the living room to pull herself together. Strange how the living room, which felt so abandoned after Glory moved out, now felt crowded with memories. When they were young, the room was off limits, company only. But after Solly was gone, Glory took it over and made it her sitting room. Now it felt as if her mother had returned to reclaim every bit of it at once. There she was at the bay window, peering out to see who was stopping by the neighbor's house so late. And there she was on the velvet couch, adjusting the cold compress so it didn't sit so heavy on her eyes. And there she was, sitting on the club chair in a funk, because the Norwegian fjord puzzle Ginger bought for her turned out to have three or maybe it was 4 pieces missing from the boat. The lights dimmed. Were her eyes going now? Possibilities presented themselves. Infection, cataracts, macular degeneration. All of them ill-timed.
Good God, what now?
It was Mimi in the hallway. Ginger straightened.
Nothing. Something weird with my eyes. The light went dim and then it got bright. I'm sure it's nothing.
You mean like this?
Mimi slid the dimmer up and down. And above Ginger's head, the hi-hats went dim and then bright.
As if I accidentally brushed against the switch, which in fact is what I did.
Oh, thank God. I feel faint.
Ginger touched her face. Her cheeks were damp. She moved her hands away and saw her fingers trembling. When she glanced over at Mimi, she noticed her sister was having moisture issues of her own.
Were you crying?
Absolutely not.
No crying in public. Glory had trained them well. Ginger wiped at her eyes, and then at the same time, they asked each other,
"Why didn't you tell me you found her?"
Footsteps. The sisters moved apart.
"Here she is."
Mimi's mouth turned up into a broad smile. Ginger had carefully thought it through in the car. The best strategy for the reunion with her sister would be a slow approach. Gentle conversation while she felt things out. But her body seemed to have a different idea, because now she found herself racing over and throwing her arms around Callie's back, surprising them both. They stood for a moment as if glued together, and then Callie shifted. It was a tiny motion, a quiver, really, but enough to make Ginger step away.
"I'm crushing you. I'm sorry."
"That's okay."
Mimi beamed.
"Does she look great or what?"
Impossibly, her smile got bigger, the tendons in her neck flaring so wide Ginger feared they might snap.
"She does. You do. You look great."
Ginger didn't want to stare, but how could she help it? She couldn't find a remnant of the face she once knew. The woman who stood before her, in her late 30s with a lean body and freckled shoulders, was as unfamiliar as a stranger. Her eyes filled again, and not knowing what else to do, she lurched forward to give another hug, this time harder. Their heads touched, and she whispered,
"Where have you been?"
And then winced at her hungry tone. Callie gently pulled away.
"I'm happy to see you."
"This is super-duper great," Mimi cheered. "Together again, forward march."
"Are you here for long?" Ginger asked. "Where do you live? What do you do?"
She needed to stop, but there was so much she didn't know.
"I hope you're back for good."
"I'm back for now. One day at a time." As if possessed, Ginger's questions kept coming.
"How did you find out Mom died?"
Callie's face seemed to flatten.
"Mimi just told me."
"Oh, you didn't know?"
Ginger reached out to embrace her again, but stopped herself.
"I thought that's why you came. Why did you come?"
"The lady at the place called me last night. She told me Mom was talking in numbers and I should come see her, just in case." Ginger blinked as she took this in. A lady had called.
"Tracy? The social worker?"
Callie nodded. The microwave beeped.
"That's for me. I couldn't find the teapot.
She corrected herself as she hurried to the kitchen. At least one thing remained unchanged. Callie still had what Glory liked to call the mangle tangle. They stood close in the front hall, whispering.
"No," Mimi said. "She didn't say a thing about where she lives. Nothing. Nothing about anything. I've been blathering on, telling her about the boys, about Neil, about you. She asked a lot of questions about you."
"Okay, we need to go slow. Let her be the one to tell us. I'm sure when she's ready to explain where she's been, she will. We just have to make sure we don't scare her away."
"Why are you lecturing me? You're the one giving her the third degree."
They heard the sound of a crash from the kitchen. When they got there, they saw Callie squatting on the floor, collecting the shards of a broken teacup.
I'm so clumsy. I drop things all the time.
I'm clumsy, too.
Ginger kneeled to help gather the pieces.
Family trait.
Clumsy.
Mimi corrected them both. When Ginger dropped the shards she'd collected into the garbage, Mimi noticed her hand.
Are you bleeding?
She examined the cut.
Are you kidding me? Callie breaks a cup and you bleed? How did you manage that?
I scraped my hand in the parking lot at the Meadows. It must have reopened. That's all. I'm fine.
She grabbed some paper towels and sat at the kitchen table.
I was so excited to hear you came, she told Callie, that I fell running to my car. Ridiculous, right?
I love to run, too,
Callie said, and then she went back to preparing her tea. Making tea seemed to be a complicated process, and she did it with the focus of a monk. Could she be a monk? Ginger would not ask. Unless, what if Callie thought this meant she didn't care? What if she went back to her monastery and told the other monks she decided to return because no one in her family had been at all curious about her life?
So,
Ginger tried to keep her tone casual.
Mom said you were in a cult for a while.
Gloria had shared that about her sister. She was in a cult, which, sometime later, she left.
But she never said which cult it was, or where you went after you left.
Callie looked confused. Mimi grabbed Ginger's hand.
Gingy, you're bleeding again, for God's sake.
She got Ginger's purse and handed it over.
You have a tourniquet in there, or a big bandage at least.
It's because I'm a nurse,
Ginger explained, as she pulled out the zippered pouch which she used as a traveling first aid kit, stocked with alcohol wipes, antibiotic ointments, and gauze.
I know,
Callie said.
Oh!
Ginger wondered how much Mimi had told her.
It's very warm in here, isn't it?
She touched her hot cheeks.
Or is it just me?
You, Callie said.
It's not you,
Mimi told Ginger.
It's not her, she told Callie. You can't say things like that to Ginger. Do you remember that about her? How she was always worrying the sky is going to fall?
Callie shook her head and went back to preparing her tea. Even though she was sitting on the other side of the room, the smell of the tea was making Ginger queasy. She peeled off one of the plastic placemats stuck to the table to use as a fan, but circulating the air only made it worse.
I think your tea is spoiled. Can tea be spoiled?
Mimi's nostrils flared. Smells like a dog. What kind of tea smells like a dog?
I can't smell anything.
Callie put a mesh basket in a mug and sprinkled in the tea a few leaves at a time.
Quite a production, Mimi observed. When I make tea, I don't even wait for the water to boil. Takes too long.
If the boys see me at the stove, makes them automatically starving. Ginger tensed. She knew how these conversations went. After the introduction of Mimi's boys, the subject would naturally turn to Julia. And she did not want to talk about Julia now. She went on the offensive.
Wait till you meet Mimi's boys. They're amazing. Practically men by now. Three talented young men. Mimi's talented, too. She's an artist. Did she tell you?
I like to be busy, that's all. Busy makes for happy.
She makes quilts, Ginger went on. But she doesn't go to a store and buy fabric. She uses old clothes.
It's a thing, Mimi said. I didn't invent it. It's called upcycling.
You do it well, is my point. It's your energy. Mimi has incredible energy. Before she became a quilter, she owned a store. Furniture for kids. Beautiful shop. I didn't even know she wanted a store, and then poof, one day, there it was, open for business. That's how she is. One day to think it, one day to do it. What came before the store? Real estate?
Mimi nodded. Talk about a grind. A timer rang, and Callie took a measuring cup of water out of the microwave. She slowly poured it over her tea and said, "And before that, you sold jewelry out of your house, right?" So they'd covered Mimi's work history, too. Callie carried her teacup to the table. As she got closer, Ginger covered her nose with her hand to block the smell.
"I really think your tea's gone bad.
It does smell foul." Mimi pried open a window and then held up the broken sash.
"Come here, Gingy, you look green. Stand here and get some air."
With her face pressed to the screen and the soft breeze of the early June night hitting her cheek, Ginger's queasiness began to subside. Something scrambled above her head and she looked up.
"Does Mom have mice?"
That came out wrong.
"Did Mom have mice?"
That sounded worse.
"Are there mice here?"
There was more scrambling, and then a bark.
"A dog?"
Mimi had a long-standing fear of dogs she refused to admit. The dog they couldn't see barked again, and Mimi let go of the window, which snapped shut like a guillotine, beheading a large winged beetle that had started the family on the sill.
"That's Echo," Callie said. "My dog. I left him upstairs. He doesn't like to be alone."
"You brought a dog?" Mimi looked outraged. "You know how allergic the boys are."
"She doesn't,"
Ginger reminded her. Callie looked concerned.
"Are the boys here?"
"That's not the point. I can't go home with a dog on my clothes. Troy has asthma and we can't have anything with fur in the house." She checked her phone.
"I have to go pick up Wallace."
Her hand dug around in her purse for her keys.
"Before you leave," Ginger said, "we should talk about the funeral tomorrow."
"Right," Mimi reviewed the plans. "Limo's coming at 1. Cemetery is an hour from the funeral home. After the burial, we'll have a consolation meal at my house, which Neil's parents are arranging with the aid of 100 or so of their closest friends. Afterward..."
"No,"
Callie interrupted her. "We can't do that."
"Can't eat?"
Ginger asked.
"Nobody has to eat," Mimi said, "but there has to be food."
She held up her keys.
"Found them."
"Can't have a funeral," Callie explained. "Mom doesn't want that. She wants to be cremated." Ginger took this in.
"What makes you think that?"
"Doesn't matter." Mimi buttoned her coat. "Plans are made. Where do you want to stay tonight, Cal? Gingy's house is quiet, mine is like a circus. Take your pick."
"I'll stay here, thanks."
"And we can't have a funeral. Mom told me, no funeral. She said I should insist." She turned to Mimi.
"She said I shouldn't let you bully me."
"Mom called me a bully?" Ginger was confused.
"When did Mom tell you this?"
Above their heads, they could hear the loud thumping of a dog's tail thwacking the floor.
"Echo's upset. I should get him. Ginger, would you mind changing the arrangements?
Mom told me you like to take care of things." "I'm a bully, and Ginger likes to take care of things?" Mimi checked her watch. "I have to find someone to pick up Wallace." She left the room, cell phone pressed hard to her ear.
"Is Mimi always angry?"
Callie asked.
"It's a lot to take in," Ginger said. "She's sad about Mom. And then you coming home? It's amazing. We couldn't be happier, but it's been so long. And it's confusing, because we're the ones who've been here with Mom. We thought you and Mom were estranged, that you two didn't speak. So how could you know what Mom wanted?"
"The phone doesn't always work." Callie pressed her lips together, just like Julia. Mimi speeded back from her call.
"Okay, Wallace is taken care of. As far as cremation, that has got to be a misunderstanding. Glory is more a bury-me-in-a-cocktail-dress kind of gal. I'm going up to look in her closet to see what she's got. You want to come?"
Ginger and Callie followed, but instead of going upstairs, Callie headed to the front door. Ginger grabbed her arm.
"Don't leave.
We'll have Mom cremated. Mimi, we have to have Mom cremated like Callie says.
I'm not leaving. Callie picked up a backpack that was leaning against the wall. I'm getting something.
She reached inside and pulled out an envelope. From Mom.
Ginger and Mimi silently followed her back to the kitchen. After they sat down, Callie pulled a sheet of paper out of the envelope and laid it flat on the table. Even from a distance, Ginger recognized the handwriting. It wasn't the compressed script of the elderly Glory, like the script on the cover of the journal now in the trunk of Ginger's car. This was Glory's handwriting before she got ill, all emphatic loops and flowery cursive. It was as if a younger, healthier version of her mother had walked into the room. And as if she really had, all discussion stopped, and every head swiveled toward her words. Chapter 23. The trunk held sandy shoes jammed inside sun hats, and bathing suits crumpled into sweatshirts. Suitcases had been hastily filled, dirty and clean, mixed together. Charlie's things were nowhere to be seen. Solly slammed the trunk and got into the car. Everyone sat, eyes straight ahead. He adjusted the mirrors, and Ginger stared at the back of her mother's hair. It was flat, the way it always went after Glory stayed in bed with a migraine. Callie noticed it too and reached over to fluff it up. Stop! Ginger pulled Callie's arm and fixed her hands so they lay clasped in her lap. Mimi leaned forward and directed a question toward her father's ear, her idea of a private conversation.
What should I tell people when we get home?
Solly stiffened.
Nobody's business.
That's it? That's what I'm supposed to say? Nobody's business? Say you don't know,
Ginger told her when her father didn't reply.
I don't know,
Mimi sounded frustrated.
For real, I don't know.
Solly gunned the accelerator. Nothing more was said. Other than a request for a rest stop and telling the gas station attendant to fill her up, they made the trip home in silence. That night, Ginger sat Mimi down and told her she had to stop asking what happened. It didn't matter that Charlie waved when they took him out of the hole. Charlie was gone. What mattered now was that their mother was sick about it, and if they kept going over what happened, she would stay sick. As for what to do when people asked, that turned out not to matter, because over the next few days, they both discovered, no one did. Mimi decided it was because everyone was too busy. It was the beginning of the school year, and people were racing from shopping for loose-leaf notebooks to getting haircuts and new shoes. But Ginger wasn't so sure. It seemed like a big thing not to notice, that a family who went on vacation with four kids came back with three. When Evelyn finally came home at the end of the first week of September, she told Ginger she was right.
It is a big thing. Everyone noticed, and they're desperate for details so they can be sure what happened to you won't happen to them. My phone hasn't stopped ringing since I've been back. People want to know. They're just afraid to ask you. What do you tell them?
Nothing. Evelyn offered her a sad smile.
It's not my place to say.
She was silent for a moment, and then, as if she could read Ginger's mind, she said she was sorry, but she couldn't use her as a mother's helper anymore. Thomas was going to stay with his father for a while. Change of scenery. She gave as the reason, and then seemed to regret her flippant tone.
It's complicated.
Thomas felt so bad about what happened, and his father just moved. Getting married, did you hear? To a very nice woman, Colleen. Not an evil stepmother at all. A widow with two children. Three now, I suppose.
She took a breath and smiled. We all decided this would be the perfect time for Thomas to visit. Now everyone can get acquainted. It's temporary, of course. I couldn't bear it if it wasn't temporary. She got quiet, and Ginger didn't ask any questions.
But even if Thomas hadn't gone to stay with his father, Ginger soon realized she wouldn't have been allowed to work for Evelyn. It would have been too upsetting for Glory. That was the main thing now, making sure Glory didn't get more upset. With their return to New Jersey, her headaches had come back. She had one every day. Incapacitating migraines that sometimes were so bad, Ginger could hear moaning from all the way downstairs. The only thing that brought relief was being alone, staying in bed, and switching up washcloths. A cool one on her forehead while a backup soaked in the bowl of ice water that took up permanent residence on her night table. Ginger was sure the headaches were, at least in part, because of her. She wasn't sure exactly what her role was in the accident, but she knew accusations would be coming before long. Any minute now they'd begin. That they hadn't started yet was confusing. Every morning she braced herself for the blow-up. But her mother did not emerge from bed. Finally, Ginger asked her father his opinion.
"Do you think Mom will be mad at me forever?"
"Mad at you? For what?"
She shrugged and met her father's eyes.
"I know it was my fault. I'm sorry."
"Fault?"
Solly's eyes shone bright, and then he wagged his finger.
"No."
He sounded angry.
"You did nothing. I don't want to ever hear you say that again. Understand?"
Ginger didn't, but she nodded anyway. When school started up, Evelyn came over every morning to help them get ready. Everyone except Callie, who refused to go to school. It was hard to know why, because Callie was on strike against talking. It took them a day to notice that because Callie had never been a big talker. How could she be when she had three older siblings to compete with? It was hard for all of them to get a word in edgewise, but Callie's solution was to make do with mime and play acting. Sticking out her tongue if she was mad, stamping her feet when she wanted to demand attention. But on strike, she stopped even that. Ginger didn't mind that Callie wasn't talking. In fact, she wished Mimi would give the silent treatment a try. What she did mind were the nightmares. Callie's bad dreams started the first night they were back, and it fell to Ginger to try and keep her frightened sister quiet. Most nights, she ended up bringing Callie to her parents' room, where she'd hand her over to Solly. Then, as if in a choreographed dance, he would slip out of bed, Callie would curl into his spot, Ginger would return to the girls' room, and her father would finish the night on the cushion of the thin foam couch in the den. It was Evelyn who coaxed Callie into talking. She didn't get her to say much, but it was a start. "You can have a second ring-ding if you want," Evelyn told her one night after dinner. "All you have to do is ask. Just say, 'May I have another ring-ding?' And a second one, I promise, will appear, presto, like magic on your plate." When that worked, Evelyn moved on to encouraging Callie to give school a try. "Try for a day," she suggested. And when that didn't do the trick, "Try for a couple of hours." And finally, "Go for 10 minutes. I'll be right outside waiting in the car." Ginger gave a try at picturing her mother making that offer, but her mind went blank. As soon as Callie went back to school, her night terrors stopped, just like that. Ginger didn't know why until Evelyn explained. Callie had been worrying about the same thing Ginger worried about. What to say when people asked about Charlie. But just as no one had asked Ginger, no one asked Callie. To Ginger, it seemed like the whole world decided it would be better to pretend he had never existed at all. Now they woke up every day to Evelyn in the kitchen plating whatever treat she'd baked the night before. Muffins or banana bread. Or cooking them a hot breakfast. French toast cut into hearts. Or waffles with sugar dusted on top. In the afternoon, Evelyn came back to cook dinner. Soon the house filled with the sounds of good cheer as they adapted to acting, if not always feeling, like everything was okay. Of course, it wasn't okay. But at least with Evelyn in charge, Sometimes entire days went by without a single cross word or choked back tears. At some point every afternoon, Glory would emerge, shuffling downstairs and offering a vague wave as she passed. It wasn't clear whether she'd come down to replenish her bowl of ice, or was just curious to see what everyone thought was so funny. What was clear, Ginger could tell by the look on her face, was that she wasn't happy with this arrangement. Her children under the spell of Evelyn's good-natured care. It was the middle of October, the first of the crimson leaves on the red maple outside their dining room beginning to fall, when Glory's headaches stopped. Just like that, one day Ginger woke up and found her mother at the kitchen stove working the frying pan.
"Aren't you a sight for sore eyes?"
Glory announced as she doled out fried eggs, yolks hard, whites with crispy edges and the surprise crunch of a hidden shell.
"Did you miss me terribly?"
Ginger and Mimi shouted back, "Yes," while Callie, who still wasn't speaking much, gave a nod. As for Glory's recovery, Ginger had several theories for how it came about. Maybe the doctor she saw for headaches finally figured out how to help, or maybe it was the group she had decided to give a go at joining. Ginger had assumed this was a consciousness-raising group, until she overheard Sally tell Evelyn that every woman in the group had lost someone, except for one woman who lost twins. Whatever the reason, within a few days, Glory went from cooking breakfast in her bathrobe to cooking dinner wearing a new dress and with full makeup on.
"I have good news," she sang out as she passed the lamb chops. "Buddy has scheduled our season."
Buddy Desiderio was the new director of her theater group.
"I'm not thrilled the first play is Harvey, of all things, but after Harvey we're doing A Doll's House. Nora."
Her eyes brightened.
"Imagine."
When Mimi asked if Evelyn was going out for Nora, too, Glory laughed away the question.
"Evelyn's not in the group anymore. Never had the right temperament for it. Besides, she's moving. It's too much house for her, all things considered."
Ginger, working hard to keep her expression blank, forgot to pay attention to her posture.
"Books on your head," her mother reminded her.
Several weeks after the news that Evelyn was moving, Glory asked Ginger if she was interested in helping their neighbor pack.
"You don't have to," Glory said. "You're not her slave."
She was sitting at the dining room table working on a puzzle, but it was slow going. Over that fall, she seemed to have lost the ability to concentrate for long stretches.
"Evelyn said she'll pay you. Where she gets her money, I haven't the foggiest."
She glanced up and took in Ginger's pale face and stooped posture. Ginger's stomach had been bothering her ever since the day she heard Evelyn was moving.
"You all right?" "Of course you are. You can do what you want. Help Evelyn pack or not, makes no difference to me."
When Ginger walked into the Clark house, Evelyn seemed to see the emptied rooms through her eyes. "I told Paul to take whatever he wanted, and I guess he wanted a lot." Shelves previously jammed with record albums and books had been purged. The few that remained collapsed in on each other. Photographs had been extracted, too, leaving blank spots on walls with hooks and faded wallpaper as placeholders. There were also big things missing, like the TV in the den and the stereo.
"I don't really watch TV," Evelyn said. "Or listen to music. I haven't exactly been dancing around the house."
The only thing that felt familiar was the smell of something baking. The timer rang.
"Brownies,"
Evelyn told her as they moved to the kitchen. She pulled a tray out of the oven.
"Let's let them cool while we work."
She had already done a lot of packing. There were boxes everywhere, closed, labeled, and stacked against the wall. Open cabinet doors revealed a small pile of luncheon plates, a smattering of crystal glasses. Evelyn could have easily finished the job alone.
"Let me show you a trick,"
She got the lunch plates and demonstrated how to pack, alternating sheets of newspaper with plates so that every plate was protected.
"Want to give it a try?"
After Ginger did, she proclaimed,
"Exactly right. You're a natural."
Ginger packed carefully, but she knew no matter how slowly she wrapped the plates with paper, it would not be slow enough to keep Evelyn from going.
"I have to move," Evelyn said, as if reading her mind. "I can't stay here anymore."
Ginger didn't ask why.
"You can come and live with us."
Evelyn laughed.
"That's sweet. But I have a place. I'm going to be a wash ashore, on the vineyard full-time. Thomas is going to join me as soon as school ends. Don't know what I'd have done if Paul didn't agree to that."
"What will you do there?" Ginger had no idea what anyone did except go to the beach.
"Work in my brother-in-law's business. He's a contractor. Remember Bob and Minty?"
Ginger nodded, and Evelyn repeated,
"Bob and Minty. Dependable as daylight."
Bob and Minty made Ginger think of Evelyn's brother.
"Will Mr. Diggins live here now?"
"Casper?" Evelyn laughed. "No, he's on the island full-time now. That's who I'm moving in with until Thomas comes. Then we'll move into our own place. Paul would not stand for it if Thomas lived with Casper. He hates him."
She shook her head. "Can you imagine having someone hate your brother?"
She suddenly remembered Ginger no longer had a brother.
"Of course you couldn't. No one hated Charlie. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought that up."
"It's okay. I don't mind. No one talks about Charlie at all." It felt good to say his name out loud. Evelyn looked relieved.
"Good. All I meant was, it feels bad to find out someone you care about hates someone in your family."
She stopped to consider this.
"You don't think I hate your mother, do you? Because I don't."
Ginger couldn't imagine Evelyn hating anyone.
"No. My father doesn't like your brother either, but I don't know why."
She wasn't sure this was okay to say.
"Sorry." "Oh, don't worry. I'm not surprised. It's like that with Casper. He means well, though. You know, your mom and Casper, they really are like two peas in a pod. The way they love to spin a yarn."
Ginger felt on dangerous ground and said nothing.
"With Casper, I can always tell. The story will suddenly drift into that other dimension. You know, everything is going along fine. It's just another story. You're barely paying attention. And all of a sudden, the story changes course, and you're sitting there thinking, 'Wait a minute, that didn't happen.' But, of course, you can't say that. You can never, ever say that. If you did, when you do, they just look at you like, 'What's wrong with you?' Like you're the crazy one. You're the one who's out of your mind. You know what I mean?"
Ginger felt nearly paralyzed, because she did know. She knew exactly. It was as if Evelyn had gone into her brain and then said out loud every thought Ginger felt forbidden to think. But there was no way she could agree. Did Evelyn understand that?
"I guess some things probably are best left unsaid."
She tore off a strip of packing tape and closed up the box Ginger had filled.
"Hey, let's talk about the new people. The people moving in here asked me if I knew any babysitters on the block. Can you believe it?" I told them, "Are you kidding? Only the very best one who lives right next door." "I don't think I'm allowed to babysit anymore."
"That will change." Evelyn got up on a stool.
"How about you bring these home for your mom? A present from me."
She passed down a set of champagne glasses.
"I don't think I'll be toasting anything anytime soon."
She remembered something else.
"I have a gift for you. Come with me. I'll show you."
They went up to her bedroom, another place that looked purged, with open closet doors revealing empty space where Paul Clark's clothes once hung. Evelyn picked up a small round music box that sat on her dresser.
Found this in the basement. Paul gave it to me 100 years ago.
She wiped some dust off with her sleeve and handed it over.
Made me think of you. Turn the crank. It plays a song.
Ginger sat on the bed and turned the crank and listened to the scratchy tune, and Evelyn sang along.
Beautiful dreamer.
Her voice was quiet and low.
Wake unto me.
She couldn't carry a tune like Glory.
Starlight and dewdrops are waiting for thee.
But she didn't seem to care.
Sounds of the rude world.
She locked eyes with Ginger as she sang, heard in the day. And when Ginger's eyes began to fill with tears, Evelyn's filled too, as if in reply,
lulled by the moonlight have all passed away.
Ginger stared at the dented tin box. Even though it looked old, the colors of the children painted around the circumference seemed vibrant and alive.
This will be you someday.
Evelyn tapped the figure of a young girl driving a car. The girl's dark hair floated behind her head as if blown there by the wind, and her hands, covered in white gloves, held tight to the yellow steering wheel of the red convertible. Behind the car, puffs of smoke trailed like earthbound clouds.
You know I'm not leaving you. I'll write to you all the time. I'll write so many letters you'll wish I would stop. And someday, when you're old enough to drive,
she tapped the girl on the music box again,
you'll come visit me and Thomas.
You're going to be okay, she promised. You'll be better than okay. You'll be a wise, kind grown-up. You'll see. She stopped to think about it.
There's one of us in every family, you know.
Human lie detectors. Geiger counters set to listen for the truth. Even though they were alone in the house, she whispered,
Your mother does the best she can. And she loves you, truly, in her way.
She stood up, and her face turned stern.
I want you to remember this. Nothing is your fault. Not what happened last summer, not what's happening now. You're going to be in charge of the world someday, Ginger. But you're not in charge yet.
The doorbell rang. Evelyn set the music box on her dresser. They hurried downstairs.
Look who's come to help us,
Evelyn said when she opened the door.
Glory's mood wasn't good upon arrival,
but the gift of the champagne glasses worked like magic. Her smile turned real as she held a glass to the window to admire its graceful shape.
These are actual crystal,
she told Ginger, and then tapped the rim so Ginger could hear the ping that proved it. She carried the box to the door.
I guess this is goodbye.
She and Evelyn touched cheeks. Then Evelyn put her hand on Ginger's shoulder.
Do I get a hug?
When Ginger didn't move, she told her,
I'll be gone when you get home from school tomorrow.
Because Glory was right there watching, Ginger couldn't do what she wanted, which was to hug Evelyn so hard it might convince her to stay. She did manage to squeeze tight enough that Glory elbowed her and said,
Geez, Louise Jack LaLanne, you trying to break her in half?
They all laughed at that. But as she laughed, Ginger felt her eyes welling with tears, so she excused herself, saying she had cramps, and ran home. First one out of the house the next day, she noticed the top of the milk box on the front step was ajar. She swooped down and scooped up the music box before anyone noticed, and then tucked it in her jacket. As her mother pulled out of the driveway, Ginger glanced back at the Clark house, and for a moment thought she saw a face peering out the living room window. But there was no one home. Evelyn's car was gone. The house was dark and abandoned. She quickly turned away.
Chapter 24. No funeral.
Ginger put down the letter.
That's what it says.
Ridiculous.
Mimi disappeared into the dining room, and Ginger heard her clanging around the liquor cabinet.
Every single bottle is empty,
she reported when she came back. She opened the cabinets on either side of the sink. Someone who loved Harvey Wallbangers has to have vodka somewhere. She moved to the cabinet opposite the stove and narrated its contents.
Matzo meal, tomato soup, Drano, Preparation H. Why are we paying attention to a letter written by a woman who was out of her mind?
What she means, Ginger translated for Callie, is that Mom wasn't herself.
Callie nodded.
I know.
Mimi disappeared into the pantry and came back a moment later holding a slinky.
Here we go.
Her hands began to move, slightly up, slightly down, and the room fell silent to the ching-ching, ching-ching of the coils.
Right here.
She stopped, and the metal spiral settled, rearranging itself into two unequal halves.
Our inheritance, a slinky and a letter from a lunatic.
From someone suffering from dementia,
Ginger corrected her.
This was written before that.
Callie pointed to the date at the top of the letter.
September, Ginger saw. September 2 years ago.
2 years ago, Julia was 15. She hadn't yet met Nick. She hadn't cut a day of school. Her worst transgression then? Texting at the table. Ginger turned to Callie.
Is that when you and Mom reconciled? 2 years ago?
Before Callie could respond, a door banged open upstairs. The barking dog was loose. They could hear him galumphing above and then careening down the stairs. His paws fought for traction on the wood floor in the foyer, and then scrambling, he righted himself and burst into the kitchen. The dog, a Springer Spaniel, all white fur and liver-colored spots, ran slightly off kilter. His tail wagged so fast it looked comical. Of all people, he chose Mimi to explore first, skidding over and placing his head on her lap, gazing up at her with horsey brown eyes.
Get that beast off me!
Echo,
Callie called. The dog turned toward her.
It's okay.
He wagged his way over to Ginger, who said,
He's beautiful. Thank you.
Callie whispered softly, and the dog came and lay down at her feet.
After the cremation, Mom wants a memorial service. Nothing big, just a short ceremony as we scatter her ashes. At the house or at sea, whichever we want.
What?
Mimi grabbed the letter.
How am I supposed to explain this to the boys? They know cremation is against our religion.
But Ginger was bothered by something else.
Why at the sea?
That seemed cruel.
And why at the house? We're selling the house. She knew that. She decided that on her own.
Mimi narrowed her eyes.
Is that what this is about? Do you think you're getting the house? Because don't shoot the messenger, Callie, but Gingy's right. Mom took out a reverse mortgage behind our backs. Her house belongs to the bank.
Oh, no, she didn't mean this house.
Callie turned the paper over. There was more writing on the back.
She means the other house. The house on Martha's Vineyard.
Ginger shook off a chill.
That house isn't ours. We rented it one time. Why would she want us to scatter her ashes on someone else's property?
It's not someone else's. It's ours. Echo's head was back on Mimi's lap, but this time she was too excited to notice.
We own a house on Martha's Vineyard.
We don't, Ginger told her. That was a rental. 1 month. One time.
I only know about now. We own it now.
Callie looked surprised.
You didn't know?
Is it on the water?
Mimi was giddy.
I don't remember anything about that house, but if there's even a smudge of a water view, What a difference that will make in the sale. We don't own it, Ginger repeated. Just thinking about the house made her shiver. Thank God.
Really, Gingy? You're upset to find...